This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Somebody feel a draft? We had the NBA draft in the first round of it last night. Nick and I are going to be happy to break down a lot about what happened there. We got Ricky O'Donnell from SBN joining us as well. He'll be joining us on the Progressive Guest Line in the next segment. Play It or Pass It is in our future, as is Dinger Thursday. Only three games to choose from, so we have to be a little tricky with that, but going to have fun doing that. But still, Nick, the NBA draft happened last night. No shock, Cooper Flagg, number one. No shock, Dylan Harper, number two, for that matter, as well. I was asked this question yesterday on High Stakes Fantasy Advantage on SiriusXM Fantasy. Should he be a top 40 fantasy player already? I think the answer is probably. I think he'll get drafted higher than that, though, given all the hype, all the attention he's seen so far. What do you think? What are your expectations for him in year one in Dallas?
Yeah, I think that's a big question when it comes to Cooper Flagg, right? There's no shock with what we saw with the number one pick last night. There was no shock with what we saw at number two with Dylan Harper. Now our attention turns to next season. And okay, now we have to start living up to those expectations. You know, part of what makes this a unique situation is that the Dallas Mavericks are a non-traditional holder of the number one pick, right? This isn't a team that's completely bottomed out and you're looking to start fresh and bring in a guy who's just going to soak up every possession. He's going to put up a 30% usage rate and, you know, you're going to let him grow over the next couple of years. Obviously, he's going to be an integral part of this Mavs team, but this is a Dallas team that, you know, what was right there in terms of the postseason race in a really deep Western Conference. They'll get Kyrie Irving back midseason. You, of course, have an all-NBA talent at the top of the roster in Anthony Davis. Klay Thompson is still in place. You know, everybody piles on the Dallas Mavericks, and rightfully so, I will say, for the Luka Doncic trade. But there's still a lot of talent left on this roster. So that's a long-winded way of saying, Jeff, this is not just going to be, all right, clear out, Cooper, go take the ball, and go get us 25 a night. You know, I almost think this is better suited for his skill set. You know, Cooper Flagg himself, before the draft last night, Jeff, was asked, you know, who in the NBA do you try to model your game after? Who reminds you of yourself? He said Kawhi Leonard, which I think is really interesting. There's not really a great one-to-one comp for Cooper Flagg, you know, somebody like a kind of a junior version of Kevin Garnett, doesn't quite have that same size and length, but, you know, reminiscent of what he brings on the defensive end. I think Kawhi is a really good comp. And remember, it took Kawhi Leonard several years to become the Kawhi Leonard that we know today. So I think Cooper Flagg will be a very good player right away. I would be surprised if we see an all-time statistical rookie season out of Cooper Flagg. I don't think he's going to be pushing for 20 points per game. You know, I think that like 14 to 17 range is pretty realistic. You asked about his fantasy value. He's one of those prospects that people are going to reach for. He's probably going to go two, maybe three rounds ahead of where he should actually go. It's worth noting that most rookies, regardless of position, don't tend to be, you know, excellent fantasy values in year one, but you're going to have to pay up for Cooper Flagg if you want to take him in fantasy. And unsurprisingly, Jeff, we have updated Rookie of the Year odds in light of last night's round one. Cooper Flagg opening as your favorite at DraftKings at minus 200.
Yeah, and it's not a shock or even wrong that he's a favorite. And I just think, though, this is such a deeper draft class. You know, if Cooper Flagg headed up last year's draft class, what would his Rookie of the Year odds be? Like minus 900, minus 1,000? Compared to this year's class where you have Harper, Bailey, a number of other ready, right out of the box prospects here. I think it's a tougher year to be betting on Rookie of the Year.
Oh, no question. No question. I think Cooper Flagg would be in the quadruple digits if he was in last year's class. I think it would be, you know, minus 1,000 or even longer than that or shorter than that, to be honest. You know, and even, you know, somebody asked me yesterday, you know, like, where would Zach Risacher go in this year's class? He, of course, was the number one pick last year. It's like, I don't know, maybe seventh or eighth. I mean, this is a significantly better class than last season. Flagg should, of course, be the favorite. And, you know, because he's Cooper Flagg, because he has the profile of a number one pick, somebody we've been talking about in that context for multiple years, it is one of those situations where someone else is going to have to pull it away from him. Like, everybody's going to want to give this award to Cooper Flagg. Like, he has to lose it and someone else has to grab it from him. I don't mind Dylan Harper at 9-1, but, you know, we're talking about Cooper Flagg joining a talented Dallas Mavericks team. Kind of the same situation for Dylan Harper. You know, you have Victor Wembanyama, you have De'Aaron Fox, Devin Vassell. There are some real pieces in San Antonio. I don't think Dylan Harper is walking into a 25% usage rate right away. Ace Bailey at 10-1. That's interesting. We'll talk more about Ace Bailey as the show rolls along. The guy for me, though, Jeff, if I was betting this market right now, I think it would be Trey Johnson from Texas, who landed with the Washington Wizards at number six. Yeah, the Wizards have some veterans. They just acquired CJ McCollum. They still have Marcus Smart. They still have Chris Middleton. I'm not convinced all those guys are going to be on the roster come opening night. If they are, I don't think they're on the roster by the time we get to the trade deadline. They're all on expiring contracts. You know, Washington wants to shed as much money as possible. If you're looking for one of those situations where a score first player in Trey Johnson, who put up 20 a game last year at Texas, is going to a situation where he's going to have the ball a ton, I think that's what it's going to be for him in Washington.
Yeah, I like that formula quite a bit. We like you alluded to, they're trying to set themselves up for having all this cap room in 2026. We'll see what sort of inventory is there. That's a whole different conversation, though. As you said, many have said that the draft started at three. You know, Harper went two. He was minus 8,000. We knew that going in that he was going to end up with the Spurs. The Sixers at three took VJ Edgecombe. Your reaction to that?
Yeah, well, this started to feel like it was going to be the case in the hours leading up to the draft. The money was really coming in on Edgecombe to be the number three overall pick. I think the price got down to minus 750 by the time the Sixers were on the clock. I'll be honest, Jeff, I kind of got this one wrong. I thought the Sixers would maybe look a little bit harder at trading down. You know, I thought, you know, try to play hardball with Charlotte, try to play hardball, you know, with a team like the Utah Jazz or even Washington, you know, if you could kind of get some information, get some intel as far as who those teams wanted. But the Sixers really couldn't go wrong here, to be honest. You know, had they taken, say, Konkanipple, who went number four, I think you sell that as, okay, he's more of a win now piece. He helps us try to win the Eastern Conference next season. And Philly's in such a unique position right now where they are resigned to their fate of building around Joel Embiid and Paul George. You know, there's been some talk of what they tried to get out of the PG contract. Maybe, I don't know who's taking that contract right now. You're probably going to get negative value back for it. For better or for worse, their hopes are tethered to those two guys. And it's Embiid and Paul George trying to stay healthy next season. So taking Edgecombe here, to me, that was just a best player available, best talent available on the board. You know, somebody who certainly will be a part of this rotation next season, but is almost more of a future piece, right? Looking ahead to the post-Embiid, post-Paul George era, whenever that begins in Philly. So I didn't have a problem at all with the Sixers taking VJ Edgecombe. I just thought they might entertain some more trade down offers with that spot.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes these trades happen after the fact, but obviously you want to do it before the pick so you can have a little bit more power, a little bit more currency there. But, you know, maybe it's just a player that they want later on. We'll see about that. But if he stays in Philly, I like him there in Philly. The Utah Jazz, they're the team that landed on Ace Bailey at number five. He personally was surprised. Mm-hmm. It was plus money, I think plus 300 for him to end up in Utah there. At the number five pick, and then later traded up for Walter Clayton Jr. Your reaction?
Look, I don't have a problem with Utah doing this. Certainly Ace Bailey seemed shocked that this was the outcome. I don't know how he could be shocked by anything, though, the way that he handled the lead up to the NBA draft. Like, I don't know what he thought, you know, what strings he and his agent or his pseudo agent thought that they were pulling here. You know, if you don't meet with any teams, you don't work out for any teams, it's going to be really difficult to sway your way to a certain destination. But we know very little about Ace Bailey's motivations right now. What we do know, or at least what the messaging has been from his camp, is that he wanted to go somewhere where he could be groomed as a potential star. He didn't want to end up with a team where, you know, he's marginalized early on, he's asked to be a role player, and maybe that changes the way he develops. I think in a roundabout way, even if he's not thrilled about landing in Utah geographically, he kind of got his wish here, right? I mean, who else really scares you on this Utah roster? It's like, yeah, you have Lauri Markkanen, who plays 50 games a year and is ultimately pretty passive as far as number one options go. You have some young talent who they've picked up over the last couple of years, but really nobody that you circle and say, this is the guy going forward. This is the face of our franchise in 2028 and beyond. I think that's what Utah is doing by taking Ace Bailey at number five. You're taking a big swing on a guy who could be that player. You're getting a guy that a month ago, everybody thought was going to go with one of the top three picks in the draft. And look, these teams do their homework. Even when a prospect as mercurial as Ace Bailey is doing the things that he was doing, the Jazz don't make this pick if they really thought Ace Bailey would, you know, try to do something to prevent this from happening. You know, I think they had some intel that Ace Bailey would at least be okay with it, even if it wasn't his preferred destination. And again, from a basketball perspective, if he's looking for somewhere where he can go in, be the number two, number three option, play 30 plus minutes right away, I think he gets that in Utah.
I think you're right. I think you're right about that for sure. The Suns, they traded for Mark Williams. They drafted, they got their center at number 10. I think this was a good recovery for them, considering, you know, they knew they had to get big men in this draft. They turned around and were able to do so. Your reaction?
The Suns have been very public about their intentions over the last couple of months. They told everybody, we're trading Kevin Durant. We want to do it before the draft. They told everybody before the draft, look, we want to come out of this with some big men. We haven't said a lot of positive things about the Phoenix Suns on this show, Jeff. I think they did pretty well last night. And, you know, they made the pick of Malawach at number 10. I thought they would have to give up that pick because they immediately traded for Mark Williams. That was not the case. So to me, you check off two boxes. You had an obvious, obvious need at center. You get your future piece in Malawach. You get a guy who's still young and developing in Mark Williams. And they gave up very little to get Mark Williams, right? You give up a late first round pick and then a future pick that's protected. And it's, you know, we're not even sure which team's going to be giving up the pick. Obviously, if you're the Suns, you don't want to be giving up any future draft capital, given how little you have. But I thought this was a really fair price for Mark Williams.
Me too. I definitely agree with you on that. Are you still using your buddy's gut instinct as your betting strategy? Come on, you deserve better. RotoWire has the real tools the pros use. Rankings, projections, updates, and data that doesn't sleep. Whether you're making picks, setting your fantasy lineup, or placing bets, our award-winning insights give you the edge you need. Get started today by heading over to rotowire.com. and entering ROTO15 at checkout for 15% off any RotoWire product. We're going to have a lot more NBA draft talk coming up. In fact, Ricky O'Donnell, writer, editor, associate director of programming over at SB Nation, is going to join us next to give us his take on the progressive guest line. Maybe we'll do, what did you do, New Orleans? We'll talk about that perhaps a little bit as well. Not to mention the Nets using all five of their first round picks. That and a whole lot more coming up on Prop Point.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN, the sports betting network. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson hanging out with you on this Thursday afternoon. Round one of the NBA draft in the books last night to help us break it all down. We got our guy, Ricky O'Donnell, writer, editor, associate director of programming over at SB Nation. He joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Ricky, really appreciate the time, man. I know you've been pulled in a million different directions over these last couple of days. You're doing great work over at SB Nation. Followed you on Twitter for a really long time. Really appreciate you taking some time, man. Welcome to the show.
For sure. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, let's start at the top, Ricky. We got to talk a little Cooper Flagg. Of course, goes number one to the Dallas Mavericks, as expected. We're expecting big things out of Cooper Flagg, but is there a case that, you know, despite his prospect profile, there could be perhaps a steeper learning curve for him in the NBA than we might expect in year one? Or do you see him as one of those prospects who just hits the ground running from day one?
Well, I think you got to factor in that Cooper Flagg is going to be the youngest player in the NBA next season. He's not going to turn 19 until the end of December. And so, of course, I think there is going to be a learning curve. We haven't seen a rookie this young enter the league since the prep to pro era, honestly, if you're talking about a domestic prospect, at least. He's stepping into a situation in Dallas, which is a fascinating one. You have a ready-made co-star in Anthony Davis, who's one of the 10 or 15 best players in the league, but you don't have a shot-creating guard for next season with Kyrie Irving out all year with an ACL injury. You wonder how much of that shot creation burden is Flagg going to have to take on as a rookie. I think that, you know, if that happens, that will be the steepest learning curve he could have. I also think he can have a lot of success playing off the ball and picking his spots and focusing more energy on defense. But what Duke did last season was they put the ball in his hands and they wanted to really test out the limits of his offensive skill set. He struggled to start the year. He was only 17 years old. After his 18th birthday, Cooper Flagg was lights out. I expect him to have a strong rookie year, but got to remember, youngest player in the NBA, there will be some growing pains.
Yeah, and we were talking about the rookie of the year odds, and it's such a better draft class this year than last year. You know, it doesn't feel like it's necessarily a slam dunk that Flagg will be the rookie of the year. You got many other good options here.
Yeah, I think Flagg's probably going to be the favorite just because they need him. They need him to play big minutes right away. They need him to handle the ball. So I would definitely anticipate that he is going to be the rookie of the year winner and a heavy favorite. But there are there are guys who could push him. I would say the first name that comes to mind is probably Trey Johnson with the Washington Wizards. Trey Johnson has never seen an opportunity for a jump shot attempt that he didn't love. I think he is going to get plenty of shots up next year in DC. That is still a young and developing roster. They really need someone to soak up usage, soak up shot attempts. Trey Johnson is made for that. One of the best shooters in this draft class, lightning quick release from three-point range. He's also got pretty good mid-range game, which is rare for such a young player. I could see Trey Johnson being a Rookie of the Year candidate just based off like raw points per game, honestly. Beyond that, there are some other interesting fits here. Dylan Harper is an obvious one. He's going to play a big role in San Antonio next season, should be a starter. Not sure how much I love the fit next to Stephon Castle and De'Aaron Fox. That situation will shake out long term, but I think that he is in position to have a pretty good rookie year. And I'll say Jeremiah Fears too with the Pelicans. I believe that DeJounte Murray is going to be coming off a big injury. Fears at the college level played with a massive usage rate, despite like Flag only spending 3 years in high school. I think they're going to put the ball in his hands and let him cook and see what happens. And it's going to be a roller coaster at times, but there will be enough highs to maybe gain some momentum in the Rookie of the Year race.
We're talking with Ricky O'Donnell from SB Nation. He joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Ricky, you brought up the New Orleans Pelicans. We need to talk about what's happening down in the Bayou right now. Look, take a Jeremiah Fears at 7. Totally fine with that. Trading back up to take Derek Queen at 13, giving up an unprotected 2026 first. It's the more favorable of their own pick or the Milwaukee pick next season. And both of those can end up being plenty valuable. I thought this was a completely indefensible decision by the New Orleans Pelicans. Did you feel the same way? Is Derek Queen enough of a prospect that the Pelicans just had to do this?
No, it's outrageous. And the Pelicans are the worst run franchise in the NBA. They just seem like a cursed destination. Not only is it horrible process, trading an unprotected first round pick in 2026, which, by the way, probably is the strongest top three prospects I've ever evaluated in the NBA draft. I've been doing this for over a decade. Next year, 2026, top of the draft, Cameron Boozer from Duke, Darren Peterson from Kansas, AJ DeBonta from BYU. All three of those guys are studs. I think potentially they're all as good of prospects as Cooper Flagg is. So to trade a chance at those guys for an end of the lottery pick is just a disaster by any view. Beyond that, Fears and Queen is a very silly pairing, in my opinion. Both of them need the ball in their hands to be at their best. Neither of them can adequately space the floor, and they're both terrible defensive players. So I just don't see how those are complementary talents. I don't see how they fit around Zion Williamson. Joe Dumars, what are you doing, man? And if I'm a rival GM, I'm trying to rip off Joe Dumars right now for all his future draft picks, for Herb Jones, for Trey Murphy. You know, we expected Joe Dumars to be bad at this when he was hired, and he is proving himself already to be pretty bad.
Tell us how you really feel. Not quite sure if we can get a real opinion out of here. No, good. I think we kind of agree on that one there. Brooklyn Nets use all five of their first round picks, unable to trade up. I know you weren't really thrilled with their picks. You know, Demon out of BYU, I don't think he was in your top 10. He went at 8 overall. How would you rate what the Nets did yesterday?
Terrible. Can't believe how bad the Nets draft was. It's like basically comical that they could have five picks and come away with this poor of a class. Again, this is just one man's opinion. Perhaps Yegor Demon will end up being a really good NBA player. I'll say I talked to him at the combine. He was a very nice young man. I'm rooting for him to have success in the NBA. I viewed him as more of a late first round pick than, you know, the number 8 overall pick. Just so limited athletically, way too weak to compete in the NBA today. Can't shoot at all. I don't know what the Nets are thinking with that pick at number 8. Nolan Traore, you know, maybe an interesting bet at number 19, projected to be a top 5 pick coming into the year. Super duper fast with the ball in his hands, up there with Fears as the speediest guard in this class. But can't shoot, you know, just really struggled with his scoring efficiency this year in France. So that's why he fell in the draft. Don't love that pick. Danny Wolf was another guy who I thought was completely overrated on consensus boards. But honestly, to get him at 27 is a decent piece of business. I mean, at that point, why not take a shot on upside? So that one's okay. And I sort of feel the same way about Drake Powell. Very athletic 3-and-D potential wing. Raw, but, you know, maybe he could be like a Peyton Watson type on the Denver Nuggets. I think that's ideally what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. In general, though, I can't believe they couldn't do something better with these picks. I mean, there were probably other players at every single spot I would have preferred. I would have preferred some sort of trade back for future picks, maybe even a consolidation trade up so that you're not drafting Yegor with your first pick. So really didn't like what they did, but, you know, Brooklyn's got a good coaching staff. Marks has generally been a good GM, so they'll figure something out, I'm sure.
Ricky, I know at heart you are a Chicago Bulls supporter, and having followed you on Twitter for a long time, you've been critical of the front office, as basically every Bulls fan rightfully has in recent years. They take Noah Senge, in the first round. He goes number 12 overall. You had him at number 10 on your big board, so you're okay with this pick.
Yeah, I would love to sit here and crush the Bulls, and Lord knows they deserve it for any number of different things. But in terms of this draft pick, I thought it was totally acceptable. I definitely think it fits Arturas Karnišovas's preferred type of prospect, which is someone who's long, rangy, athletic, multifaceted in their skill set. Senge checks those boxes. He is raw for sure. But what I like about him is, at a foundational level, just his mix of length and athleticism is hard to find. Measured 6'10 barefoot, 7'1 wingspan, 9'2 standing reach. And the guy flies up and down the floor. So generally, pretty good thing to have as a draft prospect. They also threw him into the fire of the German league this year, despite a December 2006 birthday. He will be the second youngest player in the NBA next season. And he performed pretty well. I think per 36 minutes, he was at 17 points, 8 rebounds, was getting steals, was getting blocks. So I like his production at a very young age against older professional competition. I like his tools. You know, what's funny about him, though, is despite all that, he can't really dribble, pass, or shoot yet. He is, painfully thin, so he's going to have to add weight to his frame. In general, I like the pick. I mean, the Bulls are so far away from being interesting at all that you might as well take bites at high upside prospects. Senge's transition scoring ability is a very good fit for the way the Bulls played last year under Billy Donovan. I don't know if he's going to end up being a great player, but I do sort of like the thought process behind the pick.
Ricky, awesome stuff, man. Again, really appreciate you giving us some of your time. I know you've been really busy this week. Keep up the great work over at SB Nation, and looking forward to all of your analysis of round two tonight. Thanks, man.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Ricky O'Donnell, everybody. Check out his great work over at SB Nation. You can find him on Twitter at @SBN_Ricky. Going to play a game of play it or pass it when we come back here on Prop Points. Take a look at some baseball futures, some NFL player futures as well. Talk a little Jacob Mizorowski, a little George Pickens. Coming up next, Prop Points rolls on.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson here with you. About to play a game of play it or pass it with some Major League Baseball and NFL futures. But first, you want to bet smarter this football season? VSiN Pro can help you start off strong. Our new NFL betting guide comes out on Tuesday, July 1st. That is less than a week from now. And early access means a better shot at spotting value in futures markets before the lines move. Now's the perfect time to join with our football special. Just $175 for full VSiN Pro access from today through the Super Bowl. That's every sport we cover every day at a special early bird price. The sooner you sign up, the more value you get out of it. You'll be first in line for our NFL betting guide. It's your playbook for the season, packed with team previews, power ratings, and season-long best bets. Plus, you'll get a daily best bets email from our expert hosts and guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, live and on-demand shows via the VSiN Watch app, and full access to VSiN.com's analytics, tools, and pro betting systems. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe. Do it right now. You can lock in that football special for just $175. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. All right, Jeff, it's time to play it or pass it here on Prop Points. We're going to start out with some Major League Baseball futures. We're staying home here in Milwaukee to start us off. Jeff, play it or pass it, Jacob Mizorowski, fresh off another win yesterday against the Pirates to win the NL Rookie of the Year award. This is down to minus 120.
In fact, it's down to minus 125. So intrepid producer Michael Cohen was on the right path there. You know, you had to lock that one in if you wanted to get it at 120. at least according to the DraftKings Sportsbook. Shop around, see if you can get your best price there. I think that's a kind of a little bit of a prohibitive price. The thing that works in favor of Mizrahi is that there are no elite hitting rookies right now in the NL. None of them have emerged just yet. So that works in his favor. Control still might be an issue. He's walked 7 in those 3 starts so far. You know, if they never hit them, that's fine. Great. But in the past, that's been a little bit of an issue, something that our guy, James Anderson, has talked about when ranking as a prospect there. I kind of like the price of Chase Burns at +750. I understand. I might be talking about my local 9. You're talking about the Brewers. You know, there might be a little bit of a red colored glasses here, but I think at that price at -125, I'm going to pass it. You know, the thing is, it just shows though, he's made 3 starts and he's already the betting favorite as the rookie of the year. That just tells you about the NL rookie of the year race right now and how quickly things can change.
Well, that's the thing, right? It tells you how electric he's been, and it also tells you how weak the field is, relatively speaking, although it is starting to strengthen up, given how Chase Burns looked in his debut as well. All right, Jeff, let's go to the Cy Young race, which is a much more competitive one in the National League. Play it or pass it, Zach Wheeler to win the NL Cy Young. You can get him right now at +450.
Yeah, I like this price a lot. Paul Skenes is the betting favorite, -250. But of the leading candidates, Wheeler is the only one that's on a first-place team. There's Skenes, there's Logan Webb, there's Mackenzie Gore, there's Spencer Schwellenbach. You know, Webb at least is on a team that's winning right now. They're 8 games over .500. Probably going to make a wild card spot if they can't continue at this pace. But the Phillies, we know they're going to be in the postseason, barring just a really huge collapse. Wheeler is, you know, got the highest floor of all these pitchers. At +450, I feel like we're getting a pretty decent price. I like this. I'm going to play it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think there's a debate necessarily that Paul Skenes is the highest upside pitcher, regardless of what the record might say. But there's a long precedent, Jeff, of pitchers with losing records not really being considered for the Cy Young Award. So we'll see if Paul Skenes can break that trend. But I don't love that price on him at -250. All right, we've talked a lot about Cal Raleigh on this show, and rightfully so in recent weeks, Jeff. Mm-hmm. Going to a Cal Raleigh season-long prop here. Play it or pass it, Cal Raleigh to lead Major League Baseball in home runs, +130.
Yeah, and this is the second favorite. Aaron Judge is at -105. This price is flipped quite a bit. You had much longer odds earlier on Raleigh. He leads right now 32-28. The Mariners have played one less game than the Yankees so far. The Mariners, though, they play in a worse home ballpark. We know this in terms of power. Raleigh has been fantastic. And, you know, he's played 78-79 games so far. Very durable. Played 153 games last year. So for a catcher, he plays a lot. He DHs a lot when he doesn't play. Still think he's up due for a day or two off. But, again, the price. I don't like the price. I don't think you're getting enough payoff, considering I think Judge is the rightful favorite. At +130, I think I'm going to probably pass it. Decent chance, but I would like to at least get 2-1 before I bet something like that. This summer, go all in at Circa Las Vegas with the ultimate getaway package. Just $400, all in. You'll get a 2-night stay at Circa, $100 dining credit, $100 beverage credit, and your very own day bed at Stadium Swim, where the party never stops. All for just $400, resort fees and taxes included. This limited time offer through September 4th. Don't miss out. Lock in your all-in summer package now at CircaLasVegas.com. Nick, let's flip it from player to passer, from baseball to football. We're going to start off with the Cleveland Browns. Why wouldn't we? Who doesn't want to start off with the Cleveland Browns? Joe Flacco to be your week one starter for the Browns at +110. Player to pass it.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to be a slave to the ratings, right? But everybody wants to hear Cleveland Browns talk, so we'll give the people what they want. Look, I do think they roll with Joe Flacco to begin the season. I think that is the most likely outcome. Am I going to bet this at +110? I don't think I'm going to. Flacco to me is basically the lesser of 5 evils right now in the quarterback room in Cleveland. You know, Deshaun Watson, who's obviously injured, Kenny Pickett, Dylan Gabriel, Shedeur Sanders. I think we probably see, I don't know, 3 starters for the Browns throughout the year who will very likely be a very, very bad team as they were last season. Yeah, you add Mason Graham, you add Quinshon Judkins. Those are interesting future pieces to me. I don't think there's a ton of upside with this Browns team. I'll say this, Jeff. If I'm not going to bet the Browns week one starting quarterback market, one thing I will bet with the Cleveland Browns is the under 5.5 wins for this team next year. Mm-hmm. in addition to just a dearth of talent, maybe the worst quarterback situation in the NFL, they somehow face one of the toughest schedules in the NFL, despite finishing fourth in that division a year ago. Obviously, you have six really difficult games in the AFC North. Out of division, you get Green Bay, you get Minnesota, you get Detroit, you get San Francisco, you get Buffalo. We could throw Chicago on that list. It's going to be an uphill battle, I think, for this Cleveland Browns team to get to six wins. I do not see that happening.
Yeah, really bad luck for them that San Francisco is also a fourth place team. That happened to be their extra out of conference game. I mean, my goodness. Not to mention, but I will say this about the Flacco bet. I mean, at least Shedeur Sanders graduated from the Jordan Addison driving school. So that lessened his chances of winning the starting job there. Let's move on. After that gratuitous pot shot there. Matthew Stafford, over 23.5 passing TDs at -110. Play it or pass it.
So Stafford put up 20 passing touchdowns last year in 16 games. Keep in mind, he did miss one regular season games. He had 24 touchdowns in 15 games the year before. So I think we're getting a pretty fair number given where Matthew Stafford is at this point in his career, getting it at -110. This one I will play. You know, you can't expect to get a whole lot of, you know, odds value on these type of props. They tend to just be sitting in that -110, -120 range, but I'll play this one. You know, you're adding Davante Adams, one of the best red zone target receivers in the NFL, to this offense. I know Davante Adams is getting up there in years. I think it is fair to wonder, you know, how durable can he be at this point in his career, but he'll probably be more durable than Cooper Kupp was last season. Obviously, you have Puka Nacua back healthy as well. And keep in mind, the Rams didn't have Tyler Higbee for most of last season. He didn't come back until late in the year. So that's another red zone target for Matthew Stafford. I know the Rams do tend to be a run heavy team in the red zone, but I think that could change with the addition of Davante Adams. So to me, this really comes down to, like, is Matthew Stafford playing 17 games? And if you think that's a decent bet, which I think is reasonable, this is an improved offensive line, an improved roster overall. If he plays 17 games, I think he gets there. So I'll play this one.
Yeah, I like it. I also, they added another weapon. They, for the first time in a long time, they added an early pick on a tight end in Terrence Ferguson. I like that pick as well.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm with you. I think I like that quite a bit. All right, one more football one. Play it or pass it. George Pickens, over 900.5 receiving yards, -110. Now with the Cowboys. Do you play it or pass it, Nick Whalen?
Michael Cohen, our producer, just continues to do great work here, Jeff. This is such a good one. This is the one I had to think most about of these three. A lot of it, I think, comes down to your evaluation of Dak Prescott in the Cowboys offense as a whole. You know, two seasons ago, Dak threw for over 4,500 yards, but only one receiver went over this number in that offense, and that, of course, was CeeDee Lamb. Now, Pickens finished at exactly 900 yards last season, did that in 14 games in Pittsburgh. He had well over 1,100 yards in 17 games the year before. In terms of how common this is, you know, two teammates to have 900-plus yards in a season, obviously we expect Lamb to do that. Six sets of teammates did it last year, so it's very feasible, including some names you might not expect, by the way. Darnell Mooney and Drake London, for instance. Brock Bowers and Jacoby Myers. I think I will play this one. It's probably going to be dicey, but if Dak Prescott stays healthy, I think this can be, again, a really good passing offense. The nice thing with George Pickens, Jeff, is he's proven that he doesn't need massive volume to get to 900-plus yards. He's basically done it on 60 catches in the past, which in this offense feels pretty attainable. You know, the presence of CeeDee Lamb, if anything, should open things up to a degree for George Pickens that he never had playing alongside an elite receiver with the Pittsburgh Steelers. We also have to keep in mind that as long as he's healthy, Dak Prescott is far and away the best quarterback George Pickens has ever played with. He went over 1,000 yards with Kenny Pickett, Mason Rudolph, and Mitchell Trubisky in 2023. We're playing it.
I like it. I like that he's a ball winner on the outside. I think it helps Lamb as well. Baseball talk, Dinger Thursday, coming up next on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson bringing you home, taking you up to the top of the hour. Make it rain with Adam Schein coming up next here on the network. He's going to have Patrick Maher on the show talking round one of the NBA draft, looking ahead to round two coming our way later tonight. Jeff, we got a very day heavy Thursday slate in Major League Baseball. Six of our nine games ongoing already. A couple more set to start up in the next hour. Dodgers Rockies coming our way in about a half hour. That's Clayton Kershaw going up against the great Austin Gomber. Marlins Giants also in the afternoon window. Braves Mets really our lone true late game tonight. Give you an update on what's going on the Major League Baseball scoreboard. Tigers leading the Athletics 3-0. Spencer Torkelson has a homer there. Blue Jays up 3-0 on the Cleveland Guardians. We're in the top of the sixth in both of those games. A rain delay has pushed back the start of Mariners Twins. That'll be Simeon Woods Richardson on the mound for the Minnesota Twins. And Jeff, the Philadelphia Phillies are yet to score a run in this series against Houston. A couple low scoring shutouts for the Astros to begin this series. Only through two innings here, just finished the end of the second, but Houston already up 1-0.
Yeah, and yeah, like you said, 1-0 game on Tuesday, 2-0 game last night. They beat Zach Wheeler yesterday. Colton Gordon shut down the Phillies lineup. They're really missing Bryce Harper. Yeah, boy, that's analysis right there. Of course, but they're already up, Astros are already up 1-0 today on the Phillies as well. Great pitching matchup. Christopher Sanchez. We're talking about NL Cy Youngs. He's a little bit of a dark horse there too in his own right there. I think he's like the sixth favorite betting wise there on the market there, going up against Hunter Brown, who's just been amazing so far this year. 4 strikeouts already for Sanchez, only 1 for Hunter Brown. His strikeouts have been down a little bit lately, but still getting the results. Yainer Diaz, the only RBI in this game so far for the Astros.
We are scoreless right now, heading to the top of the fourth between the Rays and the Royals, and the Chicago Cubs have opened up a 1-0 lead on the St. Louis Cardinals, heading to the top of the third there. Michael Busch, fittingly, Jeff, with a home run at Busch Stadium this afternoon to give the Cubs that 1-0 advantage. Oh, yeah, that was a little page out of the Erickson playbook, getting a little player name pun out there for us, Jeff. So, with so many games ongoing right now, we're a little bit limited as far as what we could give out in terms of our best bets for the rest of the day. But we got 3 more games to break down. We mentioned Dodgers-Rockies, our next game up on the slate. This is Austin Gomber against Clayton Kershaw. Jeff, the total is what drew my attention here. Up to 12.5 now at DK.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Rockies are becoming maybe not good, but decent enough offensively. 89 WRC plus over the last 30 days. That's actually still pretty bad, compared to the rest of the league, but still better from what they were producing earlier on. The Rockies are just awful, but especially against lefties. 279 WOBA, 62 WRC plus, a 27.5 K percentage against left-handers there. The Dodgers, they crush lefties like Austin Gomber. 341 WOBA, 120 WRC plus. They don't strike out that much against him. Gomber's only made 2 starts so far. He came back from a shoulder injury there, so, I don't want to slag Gomber too much because he's only made 2 starts, but it was pretty awful the first time there. That's why that total is so high. And the Dodgers are just really good too, for that matter there. A couple things to note where, pay attention to the lineups here a little bit. Yesterday Will Smith got the day off. He's back in there today. The Dodgers pretty much have their best lineup. No Max Muncy, but that's lefty on lefty. That's the only reason why they don't have that. The bet I like is Clayton Kershaw going over 4.5 Ks. We talked about how much the Rockies strike out against lefties. I think even though Kershaw doesn't dominate with fastballs anymore, still think he gets there at plus 130 price too. I like that. It is Dinger Thursday. I've been tasked with doing a home run prop for these games. I decided to do one for each of the 3 games we're going to cover. I'm going to do Andy Páez at plus 295. Trying to find a good price on a Dinger prop was a little tough in this game. Páez, at least he's about 3-1, so I'll take their chances there.
I like that one. Not to tip my G-Bank best bet, Jeff, but we will have another Dinger prop coming from that game a little bit later in the show to close us out. All right, Marlins-Giants. We have a man named Jansen Junk on the mound for Miami tonight, going up against Hayden Birdsong. Giants are big favorites on the money line. That one pushing close to minus 200 at DK. Total coming in at 8. All right, Jeff, I need a money line play here, and I need a Dinger prop.
All right, I'm here to provide both of those for you here. Jansen Junk, not a well name. He does live up, his repertoire lives up to his last name. He doesn't throw especially hard. He throws a lot of breaking pitches there. Over the last 30 days, the Giants are just okay offensively. 306 WOBA, 20th in baseball. Junk is coming off 2 consecutive wins, beat the Braves and the Nats. He hasn't allowed a homer yet this year. A 25-2 K to walk. Suffice to say, I'm not going with a Giant on my Dinger prop here for this one. I'm actually leaning on the money line for the Marlins at +157. Opposing pitcher Hayden Birdsong, I like his stuff, but he struggles to go deep in the game. Sometimes control is an issue. And the Giants bullpen is pretty well taxed lately. They blew, they gave up four runs in the 10th inning. Tough outing there for Camilo Duvall. So he's probably not available in this game. We'll see who their top relievers are available. I think that gives us, at +157, that makes me like that price. And I'm also going to go with a Marlin for my dinger prop. I'm going to go Augustin Ramirez, 11 homers on the year. I wanted to make sure I got a right-hander out there. I just think, left-handed power struggles so much in this ballpark. You got to go with a righty. So Ramirez, I'm getting him at +600 too. If it hits, well, then that pays for my other dinger props at least.
All right, let's finish it out with the Lone Lake game tonight. Braves on the road at the New York Mets. Mets -115 on the money line. Total sitting at 8.5. Grant Holmes going up against Griffin Canning. I know you got a bunch of plays for this game, Jeff, so go off.
Yeah, first thing I want to point out is the weather in this game. We had a heat wave in New York. The weather apps I'm reading suggest it's only going to top out around 74 with the wind blowing in, 13-mile-an-hour wind blowing in. So that should suppress some of the offense there. That makes it, again, tough to find our dinger prop. So I'm kind of try to find some longer odds. Starting pitchers are noteworthy in this one, too. Grant Holmes going for the Braves. Struck out 5 last time, but he had 9 and 15 the previous two outings. Does give up a decent amount of homers, so we'll look to him as our source for home runs in this one. Already he's allowed 14 homers this year. So I like the Grant Holmes over 5.5 Ks at -120. I look to going against him on the dinger prop with Brandon Nimmo at +400. I think the Soto is the obvious pick, and if you went that route, I'm fine with it. Again, though, it's less than 3-1, and I'm hesitant to bet a home run prop at less than 3-1. I don't really like going that because I just don't find the payout there. It's actually at 300 now, so maybe Soto's a decent outlook too. Also want to point out, though, Griffin Canning pitching for the Mets. 141 whip, 11% walk percentage. Meanwhile, the Braves over the last 30 days are leading baseball in hitting walk percentage at 10.6%. Those two combined make me think that Griffin Canning over 2.5 walks allowed at +140 seems like a pretty good bet. Probably my second best bet of the slate here so far.
A couple of quick news items to pass along in Major League Baseball before we get to our G-Bank best bets of the night. Two dark horse MVP candidates, Jeff. Everybody's chasing Aaron Judge and Cal Raleigh, of course, ended up exiting today's games. Jose Ramirez took a pitch off the arm. He has exited. Same for Vlad Guerrero of the Toronto Blue Jays. Both of those guys taking pitches off the arm. Both will be evaluated later tonight. So we'll have an update for you on both of those guys coming on Friday's show. It's time for our best bets of the night. They're brought to you by G-Bank. Introducing the $500 trifecta from G-Bank, First Bet, and VSiN. All you need to do is open a G-Bank Visa Signature credit card and in the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger the $500 trifecta. You'll receive $200 in cashback rewards on your G-Bank Visa Signature credit card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match, and VSiN completes the trifecta with a free VSiN Pro subscription through October 31st. We're talking a $200 value there. It's the $500 trifecta from G-Bank, First Bet, and VSiN. Head on over to VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This one-time promotion is limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer and will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today over at VSiN.com/GBank. Terms and conditions apply. Best bet of the night, Jeff. Where are we going?
We're going to go with that Marlins money line. I like the plus money we're getting on that one there. They've won the first two games out of this series. Maybe that means more pressure for the Giants to win, but I like the price at +157. Let's go Marlins.
All right. I told you we had another dinger prop coming for that Dodgers game, Jeff. Mookie Betts, anytime homer tonight. We're getting this at +320. The total in this game is 12.5. Austin Gomber is on the mound for the Colorado Rockies. He is not a good pitcher. He's making his third appearance of the season. Mookie Betts homered off of Austin Gomber last time he faced him almost a calendar year ago. He's got just one homer in his last 29 games. We're talking almost 120 at-bats. Mookie Betts due tonight to homer off of Austin Gomber at Coors Field. That's going to wrap the Thursday edition of Prop Points. Stick with us. Coming back to you tomorrow, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern here on VSiN. Make it rain with Adam Schein coming up next on the Sports Betting Network.